Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with baritone Quinn Kelsey, who plays the title role in the San Francisco opera production of Rigoletto, and with the soprano who plays his daughter Gilda, Nino Makaidze. You'll also hear from choreographer-performer Kem Epifano about The Last Blue Couch in the Sky, her unique walking tour performance piece set in Soma that addresses the cultural erasure of the neighborhood. Director John Fisher and actor Rudiger Guerrero shared details about Theater Rhino's production of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And regular contributor Peter Robinson reviews Smut at Word for Word at Z-Space and offers advice for clean living, or at least his recommendations for fresh air hikes here in the Bay Area. Stay with us. Ah, yes, Gloria Gaynor, that's one of the many pop tunes used in the film and subsequent musical Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, being presented by Theater Rhinoceros through July 1st at the Eureka Theater on Jackson Street. It's directed by John Fisher with musical direction by Dan Fayer and choreography by A.J. Mitchell. John joins me in studio along with actor Rudy Guerrero. John's recent playwriting includes Shakespeare Goes to War, which was nominated for 6 2016 Bay Area Theater Critics Circle Awards, and To Sleep and Dream, a 2014 Bay Area Theater Critics Circle Award winner for Best Script. He directed and acted in Breaking the Code, which was nominated for 5 awards, and in Equus. His plays have been performed in New York, L.A., and across the country. He'll appear in Lear! This July, and at the United Solo Festival in Manhattan in his one-man show, A History of World War II. John, a pleasure to welcome you back to Open Air.
Thanks, David. It's great to be here.
And Rudy Guerrero's previous Rhino performances include multiple roles in the recent production of Equus, which was also featured and directed by John Fisher. Bravo to you both, by the way, on that production.
Thanks,
tremendous.
David. Thank you.
It's hard to think of a Bay Area theater company that Rudy has not been involved in.
Rightfully so.
But I'd be hard-pressed not to mention several of the performances I've seen of his at San Francisco Playhouse, including Camelot, the MF-er with the hat, and Promises, Promises. Rudy, welcome back to you as well.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
Well, for those who aren't on the gay party circuit, can we get a little background on Priscilla, Queen of the Desert? Its essence, when was it all started?
Well, it started as this terrific Australian film in the 90s, and it has evolved into a musical and traveled around the country, and we are doing its first production after the Broadway tour in San Francisco. So it's been this wonderful gay journey, and it's interesting in this day and age because it's all about acceptance and about embracing transgenders and making it okay. And that still seems to be an issue, unfortunately.
Gosh, thanks to 45.
Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting because it's a wonderful show. It's just full of energy and all these great songs and this terrific cast. And Rudy is the lead and mm-hmm. very much the man the show is about and commands the stage in a wonderful way. And it has this...
No pressure.
Lots of pressure. But
lots of makeup, too.
But it's got this message that remains, I think, relevant.
Mm-hmm. What is the story, Rudy?
Like John said, it's about acceptance, but not only acceptance of others, but really acceptance of yourself.
That's a good point.
And like the film, the play follows the journey of 3 characters, myself and another drag performer and a transsexual, and their adventures across the Australian outback and the people they run into, the transphobia, homophobia that they come across and and the acceptance that ultimately ends up at the end. And there's some fantastic music in this show. It's like a big dance party. All the hits from the 70s and 80s are in this production.
Yeah, it's just, it's hit after hit, and it's beautifully sung by this cast. We have this terrific cast of singers. And it's like a tsunami of joy.
Oh, nice! You know, I thought it was going to be a lot of lip syncing going on, but it's actual singing.
Well, there is lip syncing to other performers.
Okay.
So there's, I mean, you know, all of the lip syncing is to live performance, which is a comment on the lip syncing era of drag, and then drag becomes the performers performing themselves.
So the bus is called Priscilla, and it's going on a trip.
It's going on a trip. There's a bus on stage, big bus. Big, huge bus on stage that spins. Yes.
Congrats and shout out then to your set designer.
Yeah, he's painting away. Pink, 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 pink.
Well, my first reaction was, how much fun was this putting together?
It was, you know what was so much fun is to step out of the room to work with the principals on an acting scene and to come back and watch this dance number. I mean, suddenly there's like 15 people just banging away at a dance number. And this, our choreographer is ruthless. He's like, you're going to sing and you're going to dance and you're going to work. And the dance numbers are a joy. I was just sit there and I was like, I can't believe this is happening in front of me.
And it's one show-stopping number after another. Mm-hmm. And they just keep topping each other. It's a fantastic show to see.
And it's a great theater to see it in, too. The Eureka's so intimate. And
yeah, you're right there.
You're not a bad seat in the house.
And you're not 50 miles away sort of wondering who's speaking or anything like that. I mean, you are right there. You're like right in the middle of it.
Yeah, because even though it's this big musical spectacle, it's there's still an intimacy to it, which we've embraced.
Yeah.
Nice. Tell me about your co-stars.
My co-stars, well, we've got, let me check here, Daryl Jones.
Daryl Jones.
Who plays Bernadette, who is the transsexual. Uh-huh. And then Charles Peoples plays Adam / what's
Felicia?
Adam's? Felicia, yes.
And this is sort of the gay. This is sort of the gay spectrum. You have Adam, who's like the ferociously young, queer, promiscuous, naughty mouth, dirty mouth, and then you have Rudy, who's I think trying to accept himself and become a father, become like a like a real person, somebody who's responsible for other people, and then you have Bernadette, who's the transsexual, who's at sort of an extreme end of the radical kind of trans movement. And it's sort of wonderful what they learn from each other. It's sort of a coming of age for all of them, even though they're all at different parts of their lives and different parts of their coming out and embrace. And they all learn something. And they all fall in love. And they all encounter themselves.
Are there any American Express cards used in this production?
No, not this one.
And please explain the reference to that.
Sorry. If we go to the Tony Awards, we'll haul out the American Express design. No, but we do have the sandal dress.
Okay, well, tell us about the American Express design. Why I even brought it up.
That's what she wore when she won the Best Costume Award, right?
Lizzie Gardner, yeah.
Yeah.
254 expired American Express cards.
Oh, I didn't know they were expired.
Yeah.
I thought they were stolen.
Well, apparently they wouldn't let, American Express wouldn't give permission for them to use it.
So yeah. While they were filming, they wanted to use those cards and they were denied permission. But then when they were nominated for an Oscar, all of a sudden, oh, yeah, you can use our cards.
Maybe something here in San Francisco would be, you know, more like use some Starbucks cards or something for this kind of crowd.
We'd have to think of something San Francisco specific. Yeah.
Safeway cards.
Safeway cards. Safeway cards. Yeah. Something.
So there is some trauma that goes on in the production as well. It's not all just song and dance.
I make everything sound doom and gloom. It's all song and dance. Don't get me started on the trauma, because if there's an expression of awkwardness or hate, I'm like, it is about the radical queer movement to mobilize this country. No, it really is just a very fun story about three really wonderful guys. And some stuff comes up along the way, but there are
some very poignant moments in the show.
Oh, poignant.
Between the big
I get verklempt. He's got a little boy. It's a journey to his boy.
Oh, right.
He's being called to father his son. His son needs a father. And it's very touching, these boys we have playing his son, because we have more than one boy doing it because of scheduling, but it's lovely every night, these scenes, because all of a sudden all the dancers exit and the music calms down and it's just about two people connecting across generations, across a country, across background, and they do. And this is a man who needs a purpose in life, and a boy who needs a father. That's the story. That nice. Really is the story.
John, you've got a production of Lear of your own writing coming up.
No. It's Shakespeare.
It's Shakespeare.
No, I just put an exclamation mark on it to make my stamp. That's just my stamp. It's Shakespeare. Everybody thinks there's going to be dance numbers. No, it's all Shakespeare. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very different
story. It's not Lear the musical.
Yeah. No, that's like the opposite story. That's about like having children and not handling the situation well.
Very well, yeah.
That's like Priscilla in reverse or, you know, in outer space. Yeah.
And Rudy, what's coming up for you these days?
While I'm still doing Priscilla in June, I'm scheduled to do a stage reading for Word for Word in San Francisco.
Great. That'll be part of our sequence later in this program when our commentator Peter Robinson talks about something happening there. Smut, the production of Smut at Word for Word. Well, Theater Rhinoceros presents Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, through July 1st. Information at therhino.org. Among the other wonderful tunes that are going to be you'll hear in this tune, in the show, is I Say a Little Prayer, the great Bacharach David tune. Mm-hmm. Happens to be Hal David's birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Hal. late great Hal David. Bert's still working down in L.A., but we lost Hal a few years ago. But what amazing songwriting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
have a great show, guys. I'm looking forward to tomorrow night's show for sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Come see us again soon. One of the many hits in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, the musical, Theater Rhino's presentation through July 1st, therhino.org. And more about Rudy Guerrero at rudyguerrero.com and johnfisher.biz for their many, many activities. Well, the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts announces the world premiere of Last Blue Couch in the Sky, a two-part dance performance that reveals the cultural erasure witnessed in the South of Market neighborhood of San Francisco. It was commissioned by the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts and developed in part with neighborhood residents, schools, businesses, and community centers. Last Blue Couch in the Sky is a collaboration involving some 20 dancers, actors, writers, and musicians, and it was conceived and created by Kim Epifano and Epiphany Dance. Kim has a 30-year history as not only a choreographer and creator, but a director, performer, vocalist, educator, curator, and collaborator, and since 1997 has been the artistic and executive director of the San Francisco-based Epiphany Dance Theater, which creates thought-provoking, accessible dance performances and educational programs. She also is the co-artistic director of Mudbutt Mystery Theater Troupe and Mudbutt International. She holds an MFA in choreography from UC Davis, where she was recently a guest and adjunct professor there and at UC Berkeley. A pleasure to welcome Kim back to our studios to talk about her latest project. Hi, Kim.
Hi, glad to be back.
Well, first of all, my gut instinct was right before I even read the press release about the title. Yeah. Last Blue Couch in the Sky. Tell us about it. It's from that famous building that we just lost.
So Brian Goggin's sculpture, Defenestration, which was at 6 and Howard for 17 years, had all the furniture jumping out of it, and the blue couch was on the roof. And I was doing a site-specific research there one day, and I thought, oh my gosh, all the furniture is gone but the blue couch and the tub. And I had started the work on this piece, and I thought, that is such a metaphor for what's going on in the city. And because that's been such a landmark for so many of us, it just seemed appropriate to call the piece that. And I called up Brian, and I said, hey, can we save the blue couch and use it for the show itself?
Oh, that's
and
great.
And so he gave us permission, and now the blue couch, the original blue couch, will be inside the Forum as part of our set. And we also got a green couch that's rolling outside that we've now spray-painted blue. That's part of our rolling set outside.
Oh, nice, because again, this is in multiple places in the neighborhood.
Yes.
Tell us first about how you selected the businesses and residents to participate and the stories that you culminated.
Well, there's been many different angles. Because I've worked in the neighborhood a long time, I've worked at the Chronicle Building at Intersection for 6 years. I've done a lot of work in those neighborhoods via San Francisco trolley dances or my own action files and research for the project. I also do a residency at Bessie Carmichael School for 4 years with the students there and United Playas, the Hospitality House. I started going in and see how can I include the people that actually live in the neighborhood and revealing what's going on there. So one way that they're contributing is we making for the set something called a cardboard quilt, because cardboard is such a fabric from the streets. I've had one Burger King box now for 2 years that I've been using. Anyway, so one of the ways they're contributing is the artists from those different community groups are creating art to put up inside for the quilt. So I would go in and do workshops and work with the people that way. Or Bessie Carmichael School, I do storytelling dance theater, and we painted the set for our stories, and that became part of the quilt. So that's sort of how it's been working. One of the artists that's in the show, Ricky Sheets, I got connected to him through the Hospitality House. He's a singer and a guitar player. So there's been many different ways in which we're working. And then also getting to know the neighborhood and who lives there now. So I've been educated, like working with people from Bindlestiff, and Oliver Saria wrote one of the sections of the script for me.
Right.
So it's in different ways each of the community partners is working with us.
So this is a story not only about change, because change is inevitable. Mm-hmm. And a city lives, a city breathes, a city changes. Mm-hmm. But the way that things have been changing in Soma, you must have discovered some things that just aren't right.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know if people that don't walk those streets know how much of a community is there and how important it is to reveal that. And one of the goals of doing the project was, how do we stay a part of the change going on? And I think that's the people that have been living in the city for a long time, especially that are artists, somehow we keep surviving because we've been through so many different times of turmoil. And I think by doing a piece like this, you get to meet the people, and by meeting all the people in the community and introducing people to each other from other places is how you let things still have a soul and be part of the city. And so that's sort of been my walk and my talk. I don't want to just go in and play something on top of each other or take a group of audience through and not have the neighborhood involved in it. Like United Playas has a group of people that help with security because they know other people that are in the neighborhood. And also, what is going on there? For people, just Bindlestiff Theater is right there. You could go see a show and come back. Mm. And what are the positive changes of the neighborhood that are going on also by the changes that are happening?
I forgot to mention that this will be happening on June 2nd and 3rd, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday and Saturday, the Soma Walk begins at Tutubi Plaza, which is between Russ and Natoma Streets. Why did you choose these particular locations to stop and tell the story?
I did something called the Action File. So a few years, I was just seeing, okay, what is the information that comes from those areas, whether it's historic, architectural, emotionally. And then I went, can I take that information and take it to another block? And how does that translate? And it's almost like if you were on a street corner. And if I brought that insight or if I use it on another place, how does it translate? And what are the metaphors in that that happen? The walk is extremely important. Is you're going to Tutubi Plaza, not many people know about, and Tutubi means dragonfly in Tagalog. And there's dragonflies on the mural in there, and it's sort of offset, but cars can't go in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we go in there, and we start there, and we sort of greet you in, and we do a dance, and it's a ritual-like dance.
And then
we take you on this journey, Six and Howard, down to where the Blue Couch was, the Orlando
right.
Hotel has somebody dancing on the fire escape.
Cool.
Then we go up and go down Minna Street. And, you know, Minna and Mary, right, with the Chronicle Building. We're dancing under the Chronicle Building.
Wow, cool.
Then we go by the Tempest. Then we go up to the Irish Pub on the corner.
And then it culminates at the Yerba Buena Center. It just occurred to me, do we know who or what was displaced when the Yerba Buena Center was built?
Well, that, you hit it on the head. There's an actor named Bob Ernst, and he's been around forever. He's fabulous. And he plays this character named Peter, who used to live there before it became YBCA. And Joan Holden wrote the script for that. And she was one of the main writers for the mime troupe years ago.
Mm-hmm.
She's still active in writing, and we've taken lots of walks. So she's written many of the script parts for different characters along the way, and they're all at different time frames. But so you get to hear that story.
Mm. Nice.
This guy, Peter.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit of the music
yes.
now as well.
Uh-huh.
And I should just mention once again, to find out more information about Last Blue Couch in the Sky, performances June 2, 3, and 4,
mm-hmm.
go to ybca.org. And you can also learn more at epiphanydance.org. Kim, this sounds fascinating. I'm so glad you're preserving this work in this way and presenting it so that so many people can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
What is this music that we're going to hear?
This is by Laura Insera. She plays something called the Khan. And it's just a little sample of that instrument that's in the show. And we do land inside the forum, so you hear acoustic music outside, and then it translates, and then we get, you know, it goes deeper with the sound inside because we're going to have sound equipment.
Great.
That's the word.
Hit it.
Ready?
Thanks for coming in.
Sure. Thank you.
Music that you'll hear as part of the presentation of the Epiphany Dance Theater and Kim Epifano, Last Blue Couch in the Sky. Well, the San Francisco Opera's summer season includes the classics La Boheme by Puccini, Mozart's Don Giovanni, which will enjoy the big screen treatment and a free simulcast at AT&T Park on June 30th, and gets underway next Wednesday with 8 performances of Giuseppe Verdi's masterpiece Rigoletto, written in 1851 and adapted from a story by Victor Hugo. Music director Nicola Luisotti leads the opera orchestra and on stage. One of the most acclaimed young interpreters of the title role of Rigoletto, baritone Quinn Kelsey, also in the cast, making her San Francisco opera debut as Gilda, the Tbilisi-born soprano Nino Makaidze. They were kind enough to take some time after their full rehearsal yesterday at the War Memorial Opera House to talk with me. I caught up with them there. Quinn, Nino, welcome to Open Air.
It's nice to be here. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you.
Quinn, a native of Hawaii, who I understand some of your early vocal training was courtesy of your mother.
Very much so. My mother's classically trained. My folks met in school singing a duet. And so I guess you could say my sister and I were basically born into music.
And then some of your later musical training at the college level was in Hawaii, but then moved to Chicago, which I understand was kind of a culture lifestyle shock for you.
Definitely. I didn't know anything about music school when I finished high school, and so I just made the decision to stay home and register at the local university with the idea that if something better came along, I could always transfer, but then at least I wasn't wasting time sitting on my hands. It's probably one of the best decisions I ever made for all of the exposure that I got while I was in school at home.
And why did Chicago become such a musical center for you?
Well, I was about to finish college. Funny enough, it was while I was here at Maryland, 2002, when I made the decision that I wanted to audition for the artist program in Chicago, and San Francisco happened to be one of their regular stopovers for auditions for the program in Chicago, and it was what I needed to do. It was the next logical progression after college, after Maryland.
And you're back this summer as part of the 60th anniversary concert.
Yes, sir. It's always nice to come back to San Francisco.
What are you planning to sing?
Oh, let's see. What have they got? I think we'll be doing the baritone aria from Andrea Chenier and some Lucia duet.
Very nice. Looking forward to that. Nino, early training for you in Georgia, and like Quinn makes Chicago his musical center or home, you could probably call L.A. that. How did you get this relationship with Los Angeles?
Okay, so yes, L.A. definitely became my second home after 2009. Because first from Georgia, I came in Italy in 2005. And I did 2 years of Academy of La Scala there. And Italy, Milano, became my home. Because then I'm living there. And Los Angeles, in 2009, I made my debut there with Elisir d'Amore. And everything started there. And after that year, every year I'm back there. I did already 7 different operas and a lot of debuts as Traviata and Mimi in La Bohème. So I definitely love that opera so much.
And then next season coming back for Pearl Fishers.
Exactly, in October. So can't wait.
Quinn, congratulations on the Opera News article and the cover. How about that?
Oh, I can't tell you how excited I am about that. It's been, a goal of mine since I first knew about Opera News. So, I mean, you can imagine how excited I am.
And the article is called Patience Rewarded because it talks about you're having to grow into these Verdi roles. How were you at that patience?
I won't say that I've perfected it, but I've definitely learned a lot about patience since college days. Patience to me is one of the hardest things for a young singer to learn, because on the one hand, you're so excited, you're so driven to pursue what's next, but there has to be a balance, and you have to know yourself. You have to learn what your abilities are. Learn so much about your own voice, and patience just has to be kind of the foundation of all of that. And it's as a young singer, you find yourself fighting against that the whole time because should I be learning this? Should I be doing that? Should I be going here? And at the same time, wait a minute. Well, especially for a voice such as mine, definitely growing very much into the Verdi baritone repertoire. And a lot of people didn't know what to do with me early on. They knew that there was this potential, but because of that, they knew that they couldn't rush. So then, what are we supposed to do? And patience. I mean. And the more that I talk to young singers now, it's one of the things that I try to instill in them, that I know how hard this is, I know what you're going through, but it's paramount.
What is it specifically about the Verdi roles that require that kind of waiting period?
Well, it's repertoire that for which you can't start off the way a young baritone could start off with Puccini and Mozart. It takes so much more time for for the voice to age a little bit, mm-hmm. in order for the repertoire to settle in. And as I say, you know, in my early years in training programs and things here at Marilla in Chicago, there were times when they just didn't know what to do with me, and they knew that they couldn't start me into the rep right away. But so then, what do you do in the interim? And yeah, it's definitely a waiting game with Verdi Rep. It has to be something that for which the voice has to be ready for, that you can't start off with it. You have to start off with other more bel canto kinds of things. And then it's just, I mean, singing in general is such a, it's not a finite thing at all. And so everyone's going to be different. No two Verdi baritones will ever develop the same way. And so it kind of has to be a waiting game with lots of experience in between and training and knowing when that right time is. I mean, it'll never be the same for two voices.
Does Rigoletto present its special degree of endurance challenges then, as Verdi roles go? Now it's become your signature role, 8 or 9 productions. But is it something about Rigoletto that's obviously emotionally draining night after night?
Definitely. In a lot of ways, I came about the Verdi rep sort of backward, you know, whereas you take on roles like Traviata, Don Carlo, Ballo in Maschera, and then the Rigoletto after that, but I sort of started with it, which in a lot of ways seems like a crazy thing to do. But my mentors, my manager from early on knew that just they knew my voice well enough, they knew my ability well enough to know that it was safe to be able to start on such a huge role like this early on. You know, and as you say, 8 or 9 productions, and so I've absorbed so much from the role and from the opera in that time. You know, having done that many productions in a relatively short amount of time, you really have to pay attention. You really have to understand who it is this character is and what you have to do to not only get through it every night, but to be able to finish and not be, you know, completely burned out. So yeah, you can say that I've learned a lot in the last, what has it been, 6 or 7 years that I've performed this role. Still learning. I don't ever want to come to a production and say, this is what I do, A, B, C, blah, 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 and that's it. You know, because I'm still so young, and so I feel that it's my responsibility to leave myself open to things that directors and conductors want to do that I've never thought of yet. You know, just to try and be as flexible as possible, and you know, build this even more. You know, I haven't even gone halfway with this role. I don't think there's so much more to learn, and so just try to be as flexible and open to it as possible right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, sort of the same question: are there roles that you have to exhibit a little bit of patience for, that you're maybe saving for a little bit further down the road?
Yes, definitely. I completely agree with Queen. Of course, I start to sing Gilda really, really soon, because Gilda can be, it's a character, even vocally, it's not really light soprano, because the third act is really hard, and it has to be lyrical soprano, of course, with the high notes. So I started it, and always was fitting, this part was fitting really, really well, my voice, and I did also 7 different productions in Metropolitan, in Paris, also in La Scala with Leonucci in 2006. And so, yeah, this part, I have to say, I start really, really soon, even is Verdi. But I waited a lot for Traviata because I agree, and I think as well that some roles need some age. You just can't do them really in the early age because they can even kill you. And you can finish your career really, really soon. So I'm always saying that it's better to go slowly and go far and not do everything in this moment. And after 1 year, nobody remembers you anymore because you are Finnish singers. So you have to be careful. And I was waiting for 5 years. I had since 2002. So I was 25 when the theaters was asking me already to do Traviata. And I was saying, no. And at 30, I said, yes, now is the moment. And I did exactly the same for La Mimi, for Mimi, because for La Bohème. And I'm glad that I'm waiting. Now I'm also in this moment after, especially after baby, my voice became, especially the middle voice became bigger and even more lyrical. And I feel really comfortable in lyrical repertoire, but still I'm pushing myself to don't leave the bel canto repertoire that I did for 10 years. I'm really, really, really patiently I'm waiting, and I'm refusing a lot of really hard parts. It's hard to refuse because, of course, beautiful Puccini and Verdi's operas are really attractive. Everybody wants to sing them, and I want to sing them as well. Of course, in the most important opera houses, and when you have to refuse, it's hard. But the carriera, long carriera, is made by no, not by yes. Because you know you will go really, really far and will always grow up.
That's very wise. I mean, it's probably similar to comparing, you know, who wants to hear an 8-year-old pianist play late Beethoven? You want to let him develop a little bit before that happens. So you're making your debut in Gilda with the San Francisco Opera. It's nice for you to get to know this part of the California a little bit. What do you think so far?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, really beautiful opera houses. I love to sing in United States. I sung already twice in Rigoletto in the Metropolitan Opera, and then La Fille du Régiment, and as I already said, 7 different productions in Los Angeles. So you can understand how I love sing in United States. I love the audience. I love the people working in the opera houses because normally the atmosphere is so warm. It's so great. Everybody's happy. Everybody is nice. Everybody is kind. And it's just everything about to make beautiful music and to make you happy. They think about us. And this is, for the singer, it's really, really important. When you know that you go in opera house and you know that everybody working there are thinking how make you happy and how make this place, like, make you feel like you are at home. So I'm really, really looking forward. I'm happy to be here. And we did great 2 weeks or how many? Yeah, 20, 25 days of beautiful rehearsals in a great atmosphere. And it's a big pleasure. I really can't wait.
Well, you recently were a heroine of a different sort back in April, coming to the rescue, so to speak, of your husband, also an opera singer, Guido Lo Consolo.
Yes.
Tell us what happened in Norway at the Bergen National Opera.
Yeah, this was really fun because I had 2 weeks free. And I, of course, when because he's also an opera singer, so if we will not travel, when we have little free times, we can't see each other. So, of course, I talk a baby. I said, let's go in Bergen, and so let's see daddy, and let's just enjoy be wife and not singer. So I was sitting there for 1 week and watching the rehearsals of Il Turco in Italia, where my husband was singing the main part of Selim. And so I saw all the rehearsals of their week. So I learned the regie as well. Of course, the part I knew because I did a lot of Donna Fiorillas and one of my favorite parts. And after the opening, the soprano unfortunately was feeling bad, and she the day after she said that she was not going to, she was not able to sing the second performance anymore. So in the morning they called me like, Nina, can you save us, because otherwise today the show would not go on stage. So I said, oh yes. I was even not thinking about nothing. I said, of course, yes. And then I said, I did, yes. I said, yes, really, I did. Because that part I sung 2 years before in Turin. And but I was so happy to sing finally with my husband, because we are not singing a lot together. And it was really, really like a really lucky moment for Opera House, because otherwise they couldn't find any soprano nearby singing that role, because everyone, I mean, you can, you have to go in Oslo and then you have to go in Bergen, and it's a long trip. So I really saved the performance, and it was great because they made all the corsets, which was really rich production, so with a lot of beautiful dresses, not modern. So with the corsets and everything, and the costume shop, the costume department did a great job because they fit. And I had whole day until the performance rehearsals about the fitting, the dresses, and then little stage things. And it was definitely one of my best performances ever. And we had so much fun. So yeah, from audience to the stage.
Well, it's so fantastic and amazing that you had that role in your pocket, so to speak.
Yes, I had. And because I saw also 1 week of rehearsal, because I, my baby was also wanted to go to see the daddy on the stage. So we were sitting on the hall and just watching for a week. So I learned really well also the production.
Oh, nice.
So it was easy to jump in.
So now are there plans to perhaps sing more often with your husband?
I hope it will be great, but we are doing little different repertoire. He's doing a lot of Mozart, some Handel. I'm not doing Handel, and I'm not doing a lot of Mozart. Maybe I will do someday Contessa or Don Anna or Elvira, I don't know, but not in this moment. So yes.
Well, a very happy ending in Norway. Spoiler alert, not so much in Verdi's Rigoletto. Gilda, spoiler alert, gets the sack, so to speak. And as I mentioned to Quinn, it must be emotionally draining for such a production. How are you approaching Gilda to give him that sense of loss at the end of when Gilda, we lose Gilda?
Yeah, you know, Gilda, she's... it's not easy to, you know, it's not easy character, this girl, because she starts this relationship also with her daddy. It's not clear, and this production is even more interesting, I have to say, because it's not normal, like, figlia, padre, and everybody's happy, how wonderful. No. Because she's there, she's alone, she's in love, everything is not true, and it's not easy to play the girl that has to be in love with the tenor and has to be in love with the daddy, the baritone, but none of these two is the real with her, because the tenor is a liar. Unfortunately, Duke is not a nice man, and her father is also, you know, he wants to protect. He wants to protect, but he is not nice with her. So it's not easy to play this character, because you have to start like that she's happy, but she's not happy for real. And then everything became drama. And this last act, you know, that she's going to heal herself for him. And it's so unreal because it's not Romeo and Juliet. With Romeo and Juliet, it's easier because it's everything made by love and true love. So go to kill yourself, it's easier because you have to just play that you are in love and you are killing yourself. But with her is more difficult because she's going to kill herself, but she knows that that man is not nice man. So I have to say, it's not definitely not easy.
And speaking of Juliet, that's another role you'll be doing soon in Romeo and Juliet in Europe.
So Romeo and Juliet, I don't have now in my schedule because now adding new parts, I'm doing more new operas. But I did a few months ago in Oman, Muscat, and yeah, Romeo and Juliet is definitely the opera that maybe I did most, really, and it's definitely one of my favorite ones. And yes, we are planning to do. I will not leave that part. I love too much.
Yeah, I mentioned Pearl Fisher's in Los Angeles next season. What other roles are you preparing and looking forward to?
Yes, so next year I will have Luisa Miller, and I will have La Traviata, and more Bohème, Mimi. And I will make also my debut in Pagliacci with a part of Nedda, and I have already many projects with this part as well. And I will make also my debut with Manon. So yeah, this is the parts that we are planning, and I have most these operas now.
Fantastic. And Quinn, you've got quite a busy summer ahead of you, as well as a fall. And we've also seen you on the other side of Grove Street singing Mahler 8th with the San Francisco Symphony. What's coming up for you that you're jived about?
Going to the festival in Orange late next month and through the very beginning of August for Aida. Then I'm doing a concert of Thais with the symphony in Melbourne, Australia. Never been to Australia before, so that'll be August in the Northern Hemisphere, going into August in the Southern Hemisphere, and you know, sweating through and then going down there and having to put a coat on. So, you know, can you imagine the confusion that some people would have? What's wrong with you? Well, I'm going on to Australia in August, so. And then there'll be more Rigoletto, actually this production, in Chicago. And then get to go to New York for a while to do some things. Can't remember if it's been announced yet. Has it? I'm not sure. Yeah, it's gonna next 2018 will be a big Met year. So one of the only problems is that, you know, when other projects come along, the schedule is full, and so I guess it's a good problem to have. But you know, you have companies like Hawaii Opera Theater, Santa Fe, you know, wanting to do new projects and looking at my schedule, going, "No, I'm busy. I'm sorry."
Difficult to say no to.
Well, and you know, like Nino said, you know, the career is not made. It's not made on yes. It's made on no. And this was something that I had to deal with from college days. You know, my advisor, my teacher in school, and lots of the other professionals in the business locally in Honolulu, basically all just said the same thing. You have to be able to use that. That one syllable, two letter word, you know, more than you have been using it. And so it's a great lesson to learn. I'm happy for a lot of the new things coming along. You know, in this business there is no job security. So I'm so fortunate that my schedule is busy, you know, that I know Nino's is busy, so It's a great problem to have.
Grab that comet by the tail while you can.
Exactly.
Well, I thank you both for spending a little time with me today, and we look forward to this production of Rigoletto.
So do we. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Really looking forward.
Rigoletto opens the San Francisco Opera summer season next Wednesday at 7:30 with 8 performances through July 1st. Tickets and information at sfopera.com. Here's Nino Machiadze as Gilda. Beautiful singing indeed. Caro Nome from Rigoletto, as sung by Nino Machiedze. Starring with Quinn Gelsey as Rigoletto in Rigoletto at the San Francisco Opera.
I'm happy when I'm hiking, packed up on my back. I'm happy when I'm hiking off the beaten track.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm happy both at the Opera House and when I'm hiking. How about you, Peter Robinson?
Yeah, I'm here, and that's a nice change. Very smoothly done from Rigoletto to climbing every mountain. Anyhow, coming in on the ferry this morning, just as the fog was rising over the bay, and I'm looking on the top deck to both the east and the west, and I realize that in the Bay Area, we definitely have nature at our doorstep. And I was thinking, with a program like Open Air, there's no more open air than actually being outside and physically...
I hadn't thought about that, Peter. You're right.
Yes, there we go. Having your feet on the ground as you hit the trails. So this time of year, now that summer is fast approaching, I'm going to outline three or maybe four of my own favorite local hikes, since this seems a very good time of year to kick off on the trails. The first two are actually based out in Marin, and the easy turnoff if you're coming north on Highway 101 is to take what is marked as the Stetson Beach exit, but don't go the full way. There is a little turnoff which takes you down Tennessee Valley. And this is easy to reach, easy to get to. And I think, like the rest of the hikes, I'm actually suggesting moderate or medium-type trails. So the first is called Tennessee Valley, and it's just a beautiful walk. The British use the word amble to amble. Sometimes they use the word ramble. That's maybe the way they speak, but it's also a word for gentle hiking. And it'll take you probably about an hour maximum, and you're down at the ocean, at the Pacific. And one thing which appeals to me about this particular trail is you've got two options. You can either take the low road or you can take the high road. Reminds me of the old Scottish ballad to Loch Lomond. I'll take the low road, you take the high road. The low road gives you good views of the adjacent hills and mountains around. The high road, when you hit the peak, and it's not that high, you suddenly get a view of the ocean. And then from there on down, it literally is downhill. If you're looking for an aerobic workout, then the high road is the quick answer, or the short answer, or maybe the world of huff and puff. And then you hit the sea, you hit the water, it's a pebbled beach, and you'll certainly find a spot if you just want to sit down, relax, and let the water do the talking, as they say. Coming back, it's not bad to do the alternative route back. Again, we're talking about 30 to 40 minutes at a reasonable pace. And if you're coming in after work and you've decided you want to leave the rest of the office behind and you want to let nature speak to you, around about 7 to 8, as twilight kicks in, I've seen owls dropping in for their evening biscuit. A mouse, no less. So you're amongst the oak trees, you come up the valley, and there's an easy parking lot. So that is known as the Tennessee Valley Trail. Very accessible, easy to reach, and just a glorious way to end your day if you've had the busyness of the city behind you. Now, my second is also in Marin, and it's known as the Matt Davis Trail. This is a little further along the track. Again, you stay on that Stinson Beach exit, and certainly for keen hikers, this offers everything. It offers a little bit of steep, a little bit of huff and puff, and at the same time some beautiful grasslands. So it really is what I call an ideal option. And if you go the full way down the Mass Davis, over the cliff, down into the loop, you will end up at Stinson Beach. So again, you have the option of seeing the ocean. At its maximum, it's about 1,500 feet, which is not too excessive. And this time of year, if you're into blossom, everything from buttercups to lupins, and then into the land of the Douglas fir, it gives you a complete range of what I call hiking at its best. And there are groups, the Mount Tam Association, for example, is a good example of a group you could join if you want to go with a group. A couple of brief words about poison oak. My suggestion, it hasn't been too prevalent this year, but probably advisable to wear a long-sleeved shirt, or not shorts, but trousers or pants, because poison oak, once you get it, it spreads all over your body.
Oh, my God, could I tell you stories about that? In my first year here in San Francisco in the Presidio area, boy, I got it bad.
Yeah. And we're not likely to get mosquitoes around here, but there is a product called Buzz Off, which you can spray. And some of the shirts they make nowadays have a chrysanthemum seed built into them, which contains mosquito repellent. Well, very briefly, I'm going to switch from the great outdoors to the indoors, and in fact to a play we've mentioned previously on the program. It is called Smut. Now, don't be shocked by the title, but this is originally an Alan Bennett story known as The Greening of Mrs. Donaldson. It's playing by Word for Word, and as the name of the company suggests, they take the actual text and put it straight onto the stage. So we're going from the page to the stage, and this is a very, very prom, a very, very fun production about a rather prim English matron, Mrs. Donaldson. She ends up being a patient, but not a real patient, an acting patient in a hospital. But in between, her renters can't pay the rent. And the trick of the play is they often, or they will often, put on a in-bed production for Mrs. Donaldson to view. Hence the word smut, and it's not pornographic. They all wear underwear, but the audience, I can only say, on my evening, were delighted. So the great attraction of Word for Word, which is in Z Space, is that you have a very intimate theatre there. You're often only 4 or 5 feet away from the stage, so you get that sense that you're part of the production. And this, as I say, is a beautifully worded play. Alan Bennett's one of my favourite living British playwrights. He writes beautifully, and he also has the advantage that his words can be translated onto the stage, into the theatre, with great fluency. My recommendation, currently running at Z Space, a play called Smut by Alan Bennett and put on by Word for Word.
And that's just through June 11th. Go to zspace.org for more information about that.
So plenty of choices this week. Either enjoy the great outdoors, hike down Tennessee Valley, or take the Matt Davis Trail, or come in and let your eyes, body, and senses be aroused by Smut, playing at Z Space with Word for Word.
Thanks so much, Peter. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Good to be here, David. Thank you.
That's Open Air for this week. Our programs are archived at klw.org. If you've got someone you'd like featured on Open Air that's involved in the Bay Area performing arts scene, could be you yourself, drop me an email, david@klw.org. The show is produced by Niels Twinkles, keeper of the calendar and herder of cats once they arrive here to the KLW studios. My thanks always to Niels. And again, our shows are archived at klw.org. Thanks for tuning in. Of news from the BBC in London is next. It was recorded an hour earlier for broadcast at this time here on 91.7 KALW. The time is 2 o'clock.